All right.
All right.
Country boy. You ready, country boy?
Oh, I'm always ready. You know me.
I do. This is Don't Ask Tig. I'm Tig Notaro, and as always, you're asking.
We are not alone, and nobody is hopeless. Everybody goes to shit. We got a friend in Tig. Yeah.
Here to help me is my very funny and musical dear, dear friend, Reggie Watts. Reggie.
Hello.
Thank you for waving to our listeners. I think everyone appreciated the wave, the thumbs up. Reggie, you know I spend most of my free time Googling you and reading your Wikipedia.
Of course.
And it says you have a 4.5-octave vocal range. Do you have any advice for people who want to increase their vocal range while you simultaneously show off your vocal range? Could you?
I don't know if it's 4.5 octaves. I think someone put it in there. I definitely have a range, but I don't know what it is. I mean, I guess it's so I'd say three octaves and 5 notes is my range.
That's a lot, sir.
Something like, yeah, it's around there. I'd say three. Let's just round it up to 3.5, because sometimes when I'm on stage and I've got all the adrenaline going, I can hit notes that I'm like, there's no way I'm going to hit that. And I just like, somehow it just happens. It's really crazy.
And is there any way to increase it? I mean, my range is just the way I
pretty
talk.
Big.
I mean, it's pretty solid.
It's pretty big. I mean, like, you know, that's a lot of people. I don't know if you know this, but people do kind of call you nicknames behind your back. But like one of the things they call you is Big Range Notaro.
Really? So, why haven't you told me? I thought we were better friends.
Well, I just thought like if you heard it, I thought that you're just on such a strong track, you know,
uh-huh.
You have 10 kids, you know, you have 6 houses and all that stuff. And like when you get to that level, it's like, I don't want to do anything to ruin the vibe.
If you ever hear someone say or calling me almost 5-octave Tig, I want you to tell me, Reggie.
Okay. I will tell you then. Yeah, I will tell you then. I mean, you can increase the octave. I mean, when I was a teenager, I fell in love with a band called The Sundays.
I was listening to The Sundays this morning.
Are you serious?
I am very serious.
From reading Writing Arithmetic? Yeah.
Well, I was listening to, I had Edie Brickell write the theme song of this show.
What?
And
I didn't know
and
that.
And she also has the outro song to this show. I'm a huge Edie Brickell fan. And so
am I.
Stephanie, my wife, got turned on to Edie very recently. And so she started playing Edie Spotify, and that in turn has been playing The Sundays and 10,000 Maniacs. And
So a
lot of that solid late 80s, early 90s kind of.
Yes.
So I was just this morning listening to The Sundays. Doubt me.
That's amazing. No. I just don't know very many people that like know of The Sundays or, you know, or love The
Did
Sundays.
Did you think I was kidding?
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
I
didn't think you were kidding outright. I just wanted to make sure that it was true. Because we had a high school party my crew of friends, like weirdos. A friend of mine's parents were out of town. They lived in this really beautiful hobbit-like home. And we were on LSD. But I remember hearing we put on the Sundays album, and we were coming down. It was my friend and myself, and we were like sitting in these like lazy boys in this like Scandinavian hobbit home, and they had the really nice stereo.
Classic, Reggie.
You know, classic Scandinavian.
Hobbit home.
I mean, come on. And I remember we sung all the lines. You know, all that high, 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 high singing. And I was working to hit that. like every note. And we listened to the album, I think, three times in a row, and we did all the melodies over and over again. Mm-hmm. And I think me doing that, and then also the Cocteau Twins with Elizabeth Frazier and all of her vocal stylings, yes. I was constantly singing really, really high up there. So I think that really stretched out my falsetto when I was young, just by me loving it. So I think you can definitely increase your range for sure.
Wow. Well, I guess I know what I'm going to be doing when I listen to the Edie Brickell Spotify channel.
Oh, yeah. You know, what are you going to be doing? You're going to be singing along?
Well, I'm just going to be working on my vocal range. Yeah. You know, that's clearly the time frame, the time period in music where you can, you
yeah.
know, get
well,
to
yeah,
the,
because like, you know, I mean, if you're doing like, you got a lot of living to do with that. You got a lot of living to do with that life. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Oh, yeah. All right. It's all right. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Reggie.
Yeah.
You're from Great Falls, Montana.
Yes.
What would you tell creative people who grew up in a red state kind of area like Montana?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I'm really happy that I grew up in Montana, and I things have become a lot more political lately. When I go back there, you haven't noticed?
No.
Well, it's a ripple effect. Eventually it'll get to the big cities. But you know, the thing that I do appreciate about it is like I understand the perspectives a little bit more, like why people might have certain opinions and so forth. So I at least have a starting point when I go back home, and pretty respectful of that, you know? So I think when I go there, I just kind of try to offer some alternative viewpoints, like try to kind of get them to see the other side or another angle. I shouldn't say side, just another angle. And usually people are cool as long as you respect them. So, I mean, I go back to Montana. I've had like three really good conversations with Trump voters about all the biggest issues you can imagine. And it all ends with like, oh, it's great talking to you. Okay, cool. See you later.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice.
And I think sometimes very unusual these days.
Very unusual. But, you know, you have to take the time to be respectful to someone that you might prejudge in the beginning, you know, and kind of hold your ground and just kind of be chill about it, you know, because
and make good points. That's probably helpful.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And not points that are just, I don't know. I have friends from different areas of the political spectrum, but probably more on the left side, I guess, or liberal side or whatever. Some of my friends are, you know, they use some of my younger friends use some pretty extreme language, which I think is totally makes sense. The passion's there, so forth. But you also have to be careful. I always tell them you just have to be careful about saying really, really binary. Using binary terminology because it just closes off someone's ears when they mm-hmm. hear it, and you're not yeah. going to ever make a point. And so I try to remind people that. And when I go to Montana, that's what I try to employ.
And then what about for those that are creative? I mean, you were obviously a very, and still are, a very creative person that's, you know, maybe they're living in an area that isn't nurturing of that. Do you have any advice for anyone?
Yeyou know, for me, like I was really lucky. I definitely had parents that were down to let me explore my interests. And, you know, if I wanted to try something, usually they figured out a way for me to try it. And so I feel really lucky about that. But I know that some of my friends when I was growing up that didn't have very supportive parents, you know, kids that did have, that came from supportive households usually picked up the slack a little bit. And, we, you know, had a crew of friends that tried to reinforce good values in each other and tried to be supportive over things that we wanted to do. So, and I discovered that as well. That was important for me. Even though I had supportive parents, I tried to find others like me that, you know, that had the similar interests, and we hung out together and exchanged ideas and had fun and stuff. And really, it's about finding your family, you know, away from your family. And there, it doesn't matter how small the town, where it's located, or, you know, big city or whatever, you've got brothers and sisters and cousins out there that are looking for someone like you, and you're looking for someone like them.
Yeah. Build your crew.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Gotta have your crew, man.
For sure. In June, you had an emotional conversation with James Corden.
How are you doing, Reg?
Crazy. I don't know. Feeling so much simultaneously. It's crazy.
And it was about civil unrest following the murder of George Floyd.
I have this history in the Black community in the Midwest that I don't access a lot because there's a lot of pain and emotion there, you know. It's, I go in and out, you know.
Oh, man.
Your candor and emotion really struck a chord with myself and a lot of people. What about any advice for people who continue to have those difficult conversations with family and friends? I know you spoke earlier about, you know, just kind of trying to remain open.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I wasn't, you know, they were just like, hey, do you mind if James asks you a question? You know, it was at the beginning, at the top of the show. And I was like, yeah, sure, of course. And I'm a pretty pragmatic, you know, I try to approach things in a practical, pragmatic kind of a way. But I'm definitely a very hyper empathic person. And so I have to, you know, when he asked me that, it just kind of like, I don't know, it took me by surprise. It was really like, it just kind of happened really quickly. But I mean, I think it just comes from me hearing the stories of how my mother, how she witnessed racism from her perspective as a, you know, as a French white woman married to a Black man. And when she spent time in his hometown, Cleveland, Ohio, when he was stationed, he went back to Vietnam and was staying with his mom in Cleveland, and just dealing with like seeing how she was treated in department stores and seeing like all these segregation aspects that, you know, that we hear about and we haven't had to live through, or at least I haven't had to live through. And thinking about that, the sacrifices that they made, or my parents had to endure being an interracial couple and so forth, I just kind of felt all of that stuff and felt like the sacrifices that they made that, you know, I get to kind of cruise around and do great, cool podcasts with amazing people, you know, and I wouldn't be here right now if it weren't for their actions. And so I think it was just kind of an epigenetic, also just memory based feeling. And,
that really, you know, came across. That's what was so intense was, you know, I think that just watching you and knowing you personally and knowing that you come from Montana and knowing about your parents and interracial marriage and, you know, you've fallen into this, and I hate to call it this, but the alternative comedy world in Hollywood. And it felt like just, it seemed easy to see how you could drift away from connecting to that or really having to think too much about it.
Yes. Yeah. You totally nailed it. I mean, that's exactly it. Because I, most of my life, I, you know, especially growing up in Montana, it was like, you know, 99% white, you know, so I had maybe two Black friends, but we just saw each other socially in the halls and around. We didn't really hang out because we didn't live in the same parts of town. And I have to say that I didn't lead with my race. I never do. And I never did. And I think some of that has to do with the luxury of kind of being hybrid and, not viewing myself as like either race, you know, like I feel like I'm white and I'm Black and I'm neither, you know, kind of at the same time. And so I was very observational growing up. And so I think I was able to kind of express myself in more of a momentous way rather than, mm-hmm. you know, based on my history. And then when this stuff happened, you know, it brings me back to, it turns me around to analyze that history and to just reveal it. You know, it's like a rock was lifted up, you know, it's just like rock was lifted up and you see all this stuff and you just thought it was pretty rocks before. And now we're like, oh, right. Yeah. Systemic racism. It's not made up. It's not just something that people are saying to get like some kind of sympathy. It's not You know, when you see this footage of people getting pulled over or people getting cops called on them because of their skin color, that's a real thing. It's not just like isolated incidents that are inflated by algorithms. It's like these are real experiences that people have. So it definitely made me bring up all of that stuff. And even talking to Guillermo, my drummer, and he's faced some pretty incredible stuff. And just it made me start talking to a lot of friends. I mean, as we all did, you know. So it was. It's crazy. It's crazy to be like, oh, I am that, but I kind of don't lead by that, but I am that, and it has affected me, but how has it affected me, and how much have I suppressed it? Am I not looking at it? You know, it caused a lot of questioning. Mm-hmm. And I support in the way that I can. I usually support other people's causes, and I'm there to help, but in that case, when I can use my platform to just be honest, if I can be an honest person, then that makes me I feel like I'm doing something.
Yeah. I feel like that's all around helpful advice to remain honest and to do what you can do. And it's people are trying to find their footing and it's intense. And it was, like I said, it was intense to see you go through that. It really struck me. All right. Are you ready to get to listener questions?
Of course.
People need our help, Reggie.
Yeah.
All right. This is our first question. Chop writes, I'm a musician just out of school, but finding work has become nearly impossible. I'm considering switching fields and going to nursing school. I really want to do this, but how do I ask for letters of recommendation from my former music professors and mentors? Will they judge me or write a bad letter because they think I'm giving up?
No, I don't think so. Not at all. I mean, I think, people who, if you have relationships with people and you felt like you learned things and you exchanged things and you grew from those exposures to those people and had a connection with them in some way, I'm sure that they would be happy to, encourage you to move in any direction that makes you feel like you want to go into. And that's also just a very noble field, and we need people in that profession. So I don't think that. Yeah, I mean, I think it's not giving up at all. I mean, that's always going to be a part of you. The thing about art or artistic endeavors, it's not quite like being a welder. You know, you can definitely be a sculptor and you use welding, and obviously you're an artist and you're creating, but it's not necessarily a trade. It's a passion. It's something that drives you because you see the world in a specific way and you kind of need to express it in a certain way. But so I don't ever think of like when people say like, oh, I used to be a musician. It's like, oh, it's like, that's kind of weird. It's like, once you're a musician, or if you love music, that's just a part of who you are. It's always going to be a part of who you are.
Right.
So I never view it as like, you can't give up on it. You're just learning a new skill. You know, that's exactly. Another skill.
Yeah, no, that's a great way to think about it. And I also feel like, yeah, what an odd personality if they were like, well, I thought you said you were going to join a band. Would say Chop, which, by the way, love the name.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if Chop came after deciding to become a musician or if it's a family name or somebody was like, man, check out Chop's Chops. But either way, I would say you have full range to judge your mentors and professors if they judge you. Because I would, like Reggie said, that would be very odd. I can't imagine somebody coming to me and saying, I'm going to be a nurse and having any feeling of disappointment. And even if it wasn't a noble profession, even if it just made you happy. I mean, why wouldn't somebody want joy in their heart or somebody who cares about you? That's what they would want for you.
Agreed. 100%. Yeah. And
yeah, we're on the same page here.
They don't have to, they have nothing to worry about.
Do not worry. And thank you for your question, Chop. Good luck with nursing and with music, because as Reggie said, that's not going anyway. Mm-mm. More questions right after this break.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.
I just feel like we are surrounded in this world by bullshit.
So how can you know what's real and what's not? Science versus. That's how. We answer questions like, does anti-aging skincare actually work? And what is your true personality type? And to answer these questions, we don't use opinions. We dive into the scientific studies, talk to the experts, and put it in a podcast that I know you are gonna love. Listen to Science Versus on Spotify.
Okay, we're back, and we've got a question about finally facing something you've been avoiding. Willem writes, how do you respond to a text that you've been avoiding for 4 days? Well, I'll tell you, this is how you do it. You avoid all of the unnecessary excuses that you want to put in there of, hey, sorry, just seeing this. Hey, I've been busy at work, and oh, I blah, blah. Just respond and say, I can't go to the concert. There's a pandemic. Or, yeah, I will get you her information. Just answer the text. What you're really asking is what excuse do I put in the beginning before answering the 4-day-old text? Because just because someone texts you or emails you, unless it's work, of course, you know, things have to be timely for work, and I'm not always great at that, but I try very hard. I really interpret this as, what excuse can I put before? What do you think, Reggie?
No, that's 100% right. I struggle with that myself. Like, if I haven't gotten back to someone, be like, oh, yeah. Fuck, oh, fuck. But really what I do now is I just answer it as though they just texted me.
Yeah, just answer the text.
Yeah, just answer the text. And I think it's kind of funny, too. Like, sometimes I've answered texts from, like, a couple right. months ago. You know, I've done that before. And they'll be like, what do you think of this thing or whatever? And, like, 2 months go by. And I'll be like, I really love it. How long have you been doing it or whatever? And usually they just pick up right where we left off.
Well, that's the thing, is there's this implied notion that texts have to be responded to immediately.
Yes. Yeah, an urgency.
Yeah, and so that's not the case. If you don't have time or interest, or even if you've forgotten. And sometimes that is what I will say, is I'll just flat out say, oh my gosh, I forgot to write you back. But I don't think there's any reason to make up the nonsense to get out of it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It makes it weirder.
It does. It's so unnecessary. Willem, I'd ask you to tell us how it goes, but it sounds like you might not respond for quite a while. For the next question, Reggie, we're going to talk boundaries. All right?
Okay.
Alex writes, my cat won't stop licking me. I know it's because she cares or something, but I can't take much more of this. She does it when I'm working, when I'm sleeping, even when I'm having sex. How do I tell this sweet creature that I love her, but the licking has to stop? First of all, Alex, it sounds like you don't deserve to have this cat. That is a love and level of affection that I think most cat lovers would kill for. What's your feeling, Reggie?
Yeah. Gosh, yeah, that's tough, you know, because, like, you know, is there such thing as too much love?
I think you're going to say too much licking.
That too. I think there's definitely too much licking. I think, you know, I've seen it.
So you'd be tired of a cat licking you around the... It sounds like the cat has some anxiety. That sounds like what's going on.
Yeah, I think there's like a, there's a, something's out of whack there, you know?
Yeah,
it's like,
and I think that Alex is misinterpreting this as a lot of love, but I think the truth of the matter is your cat is suffering from anxiety.
Yes, I think but, so. It's a coping mechanism, yeah.
Stephanie and I, this is so embarrassing how much we love cats, but she showed me a cartoon that I think any cat lover will relate to and be amused by, but the cartoon is of this old lady sitting in a recliner with a cat on her lap, and out of the window comes the largest cartoon version, because it is a cartoon, of a tornado heading towards the house. And the woman, I think the caption is, I'll take my chances. And it's because of how lucky you feel as a person that's getting attention from a cat. And when they sit in your lap, there's, you don't want to run this animal off.
No.
Do you like cats, Reggie?
I love cats. Yeah. I'm a big Meowhead fan.
Yeah. So you know what it's like when a tornado is headed your way.
Yeah. And you're just like, God, I can't move this cat. Like I really need to do something right now, but I can't, I just can't, there's no way. Cause it's, if I try it in any way, it's just not going to be nice. It's not going to feel good. I'm not going to feel terrible.
No. Yeah. The cat's going to be sad. You're going to be sad.
Yeah.
Let the tornado wreck the house.
Yes.
And I would just maybe look into, if there's psychiatrists or psychologists for cats with anxiety. I really think your cat has anxiety. I think that is what's going on. But also, you clearly do not deserve this love and attention, Alex. Mm-hmm. I'm so upset with you. There's no world where I would write in and say, what do I do? I'm getting so much attention from a cat. All right. Our last listener question, Reggie.
Yeah.
It's a Corona conundrum. That's what it's called. That's the segment. It's a Corona conundrum.
Corona conundrum. Okay.
Are you at all concerned about the coronavirus?
No, not really.
We know that mandatory masking works.
You literally cannot mandate somebody to wear a mask.
You must not leave the house for any reason. Unless, of course, you have a reason, and then you may leave the house.
Put on your party hat, because we got some work to do. Lita writes, my son is turning 11 next month. I'm a terrible party planner, and last year for his 10th birthday, I did nothing. I really want to make it up to him this year and make his actual birthday super special. Any ideas? We have to be safe, virus-wise, as we are in Florida.
Whew. He wants to have a birthday party?
Well, I think she just mainly didn't do anything, and she just wants it to be special.
Oh.
Really special.
I gotcha.
Well, maybe what we could do, and this is really putting you on the spot, Reggie, but I mean, you're great at improv. Do you think you could send him an early birthday song?
Yeah. What's the human's name that's having the birthday?
I don't know. It's Lita's son who's turning 11.
Oh, maybe, yeah, that's easy.
And they're in Florida. She didn't do anything for his 10th birthday. You know, maybe we could help make it special, and she could hear it and be like, oh, this is awesome. And then she could come back to this moment and play it for him when he turns 11.
Okay, that's right. So he's turning 11 and son of Lita in Florida. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can do, Hey, son of Lita, you've got so much in your heart. You want to have a special time when you turn 11. Oh, Lita, she's got a son that's made of all the stars in the world, but now they're going to turn 11 and it's going to be so right. Whoa, Lita's son, have the greatest birthday in the Florida sun.
aside from getting a personalized song from Reggie Watts, I don't know what else you could do. I just happen to have him right here on my show. And this is what we can offer. And I think it's what your son, I think it's what he wants. And you can also be like, it's this guy from this thing. And just go down the rabbit hole of Reggie Watts land.
Man, yeah, real rock and roll. That's a rock and roll birthday right there.
Is there anything outside of that song that you think might be nice? I mean, I know everyone's doing the drive-by birthdays, and we did that for our kids when they turned 4 in the pandemic. Nice. What about camping?
Yeah, camping's good, like socially distanced camping birthday.
Yeah.
That sounds fun with like cool gifts that are hidden in trees.
Ooh, okay. That's great. We've done too much. We did too much.
Yeah, we went over.
All right. I hope your son has a very safe and happy birthday. And before we go, Reggie, we have a little update. A few episodes ago, I asked listeners to share the worst piece of advice they'd ever received. And we got back a bunch of terrible, no good, truly rotten advice. Should we take a listen?
Sure.
All right.
My worst advice was on my wedding night. Came from a Mormon household. Didn't know too much about the wedding night situation. And my mother says to me, you can always speak up if you can't breathe. And that was it. Ready to go.
When I was in high school, a pastor told me to not be a photographer. He told me I would have to shoot things that I didn't want to.
Marry up. You find a man who makes a lot of money and marry him, and then you can do the things that interest you in life.
Don't wear your glasses because they steal your beauty. And never wear the color red. It agitates the men.
I was traveling with the United States Paralympic sitting volleyball team. Because of that, we were a gaggle of amputees wearing prosthetic devices. I got noticed by this man, and he proceeded to yell that I should pray harder and that my foot, which I had never had, would grow back.
I was flying by myself a few years ago, and we hit a sort of rocky patch, and I just kind of put both hands on the armrests and was taking deep breaths, and the person next to me kind of looked at me, and he said, here, let me just put it to you this way. If anything goes wrong, we're all gonna die. But otherwise, we're fine.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Do you have any thought? I mean, the whole, like, think, just really thinking about putting energy towards growing a foot.
Wow.
Is, it's all pure insanity. But, I mean, who has ever had any, there's no way anybody has experience in, you know, oh, I have a friend that grew an arm
right
from trying harder and focusing on it. But I think that Hall of Fame kind of shows why this show is needed. Maybe. Do you have a worst advice to add to the pile?
Well, I can't really think of any advice that someone gave me that was bad. All I know is that never look a gift horse in the mouth has never helped me in any way. Or never take a wooden nickel. That's never helped me either.
Never look a gift horse in the
mouth.
Yeah, I was going to try and combine them. Like never give a wooden nickel to a gift horse's mouth or I don't know.
Yeah. No, I think that's right.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't do any of it. Reggie, do you have anything you'd like to plug before we head out of here?
Download WhatsApp. It's my app. It's on the iOS store.
What is that?
Android. It's just like my app. I post videos and I have a little store on there. I sell really dumb shit on there and post weird things, and there's live streams and stuff like that. So
nice.
Yeah, it's just kind of a multimedia platform. I'm gonna do more with it in the future, but yeah, if you want to, it's called WhatsApp by Reggie Watts.
WATTS APP.
Yep, WATTS APP, and it's going to be available on Android in September.
Awesome. And it costs one wooden nickel. Is that correct?
Costs zero nickels. It's free.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Reggie, you're also the band leader on the Late Late Show, so people can catch you there as well.
Yeah.
Reggie, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to help me help others.
Thank you. It's been an honor.
Well, I adore you, and I think you know that. So take that and do whatever you want with it.
Love you too.
And anybody listening, you can send in your own questions at don'tasktig.org, and we might try to answer them on future episodes. I want to know what's really irritating you right now, and maybe we can help fix it. I mean, really, if there's something out there, because I have a few of those things. You can write down your question or you can send it to us as a voice memo. Again, it's don'tasktig.org to reach us with your questions. Reggie, thank you.
Thank you, Tig. You're the best.
You're second best.
Yes.
One last thing. I have a new podcast with Cheryl Hines of Curb Your Enthusiasm called Tig and Cheryl True Story. It's coming soon wherever you get your podcasts. Cheryl and I talk about a new documentary every week, like Tiger King, Fire, and a band called Death. Subscribe now to Tig and Cheryl True Story and catch our very first episode on Monday, September 14th. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to rate and review us. Don't Ask Tig is hosted by me, Tig Notaro. It's produced by Thomas Ouellette, Mary Knopf, and Tracy Mumford. Our editor is Phyllis Fletcher. Executive producer, Lauren D. Engineering and sound mixing by Johnny Vince Evans and Eric Romani. Digital production by Christina Lopez. Talent booking by Rocky Benlulu Dubin. Our theme music is Friend and Tig by Edie Burkell and Kyle Crusham, and Listen to Your Heart by Edie Burkell. Special thanks to Hunter Seidman, Lily Kim, and Alex Schaffert. Our executive consultant is Dean Capello and Gobsmack Studios. Don't Ask Tig is a production of American Public Media. And as always, thank you, Dana.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.